I'm David Solomonoff, the president of the Internet Society of New York, and we're here today at the Freedom Box Hackfest at Columbia University with James Vasile of the Freedom Box Foundation. The Freedom Box project was originally proposed by Evan Moglen of the Software Freedom Law Center when we invited him to speak on issues of security, privacy, and software freedom with cloud computing and web services a while back. And he proposed the concept of a Freedom Box, a small, inexpensive, user-friendly computer that would provide encrypted, secure, decentralized communication as an alternative, particularly to social media such as Facebook. And since then, the Freedom Box project is moving along, and today we're here with a bunch of hackers working on developing the actual software and using the hardware. So why don't you show us the Freedom Box again and tell us a little bit about what it does and how it works.
The Freedom Box is a small, low-wattage plug server. It plugs into your home network and provide services that protect your security, your privacy, and your anonymity while you use the internet. So when you use the internet and surf the web and send an email, a lot of that activity leaves trails and traces. A lot of that activity is observable by other computers, by the networks you run through, by advertisers, by eavesdroppers, anyone who wants to look at this activity, or I shouldn't say anyone, but many of the people who want to look at this activity and collect information about you can try to track you as you use the internet and as you gather information, they're gathering information about you. Right. So what we're doing is trying to build services that people can use that will protect them from the various companies and perhaps governments that are eavesdropping and watching their traffic on the internet so that people can regain control of their data and people can regain some privacy in the communications that they have with their friends and in the transactions that they do online.
It should be said that current services such as Google's Gmail or free webmail services, social networking services such as, to use that example, of Facebook, offer, quote, free services to the end user. But what it actually is they're not free, but the user is providing a product, their personal information, which is being resold by the Facebook or the entity that is offering the quote free free service, and that centralized model is very expensive to operate. To operate Google's, you know, effectively distributed supercomputer and network services is very labor intensive and very expensive. But the actual amount of personal data that I have, you know, my friends on Facebook and Twitter and my personal email and my personal website, is a very small amount of information. It does not demand that type of infrastructure. And in fact, as computers get smaller and cheaper, this type of inexpensive computer can probably handle with an inexpensive disk drive that costs $100, could probably handle my blog and, a social media application that would allow me to chat with my friends. So by decentralizing, we also reduce the requirements to where it's a manageable level for an end user, basically.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, you couldn't host all of Facebook on one of these computers, but you can host your portion of Facebook
on it.
I mean, all the photographs you might want to share with your friends, all the chat you might want to do with your friends, or even your whole family might want to do with all of its friends, all of that could be passed through a box like this without any difficulty.
Right.
And by keeping the data for yourself, keeping the data on your computer instead of using the data as currency to pay for services, you avoid letting your data out into the hands of people who are going to take it to build profiles of you and violate your privacy in various ways.
Even a privacy-friendly social networking service, if Facebook were to change their business model radically and or another competitor were to offer a similar service that was more privacy friendly, the hard fact is also that most of that data is being kept in a central data store. So one security compromise, which could be external from malevolent crackers or hackers breaking into the database, or it could be a disgruntled employee who was fired but it kept their encryption keys and was able to gain access, whatever. That type of security breach has massive implications. But, I mean, God forbid it should happen to me, but if my Freedom Box was hacked, that would affect a very small number of people. And the kind of difficulty involved in cracking, 1,000 or 1,000,000 Freedom Boxes is really exponentially larger if the security is done right and the encryption keys are really unique and all that, compared to getting into one central data store, too.
Sure, right. And the payoff from knocking over one Freedom Box is much lower than the payoff from knocking over Facebook.
Yes.
Which means that it'll be less useful to people to do that, right, at least on an individual level.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So removing your data from a place where it can be gathered along with a lot of other stuff is probably a good idea from a security perspective, but it's also a good idea from a privacy perspective. Centralizing data is what allows companies to do profiling, is what allows them to build statistics that allow them to draw conclusions about you. If they don't have your data, they can't think about you specifically, but if they don't have anyone's data, then they don't have a giant mass of data to process.
Right.
And so whatever they do have becomes correspondingly less useful.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, of course, we're here in New York City, in the United States, where there are legal protections for civil liberties and human rights that are still, whatever encroachment there may be, still very, very different than a lot of places. But this type of technology, the Freedom Box, could be that much more useful in places where China, Iran, what have you, Egypt, where there's far less respect for human rights and civil liberties and privacy. And, so that this could be very valuable to political dissidents or activists who are, really,
sure,
who need to use these new technologies, but are, very much at risk when they use something like Facebook or Twitter, which can both be shut down, or the government can ask, as they have, for, specific user information to track down people who are causing trouble.
Sure. Well, even in America, the American government has asked for specific user information through the use of subpoenas, but also national security letters,
right,
which is a secret process to gain information about people. So even in this country, people might have a privacy interest in removing their data from the hands of third parties who can turn it over to the government. I mean, one of the advantages of keeping your data on your own computer in your home is that there might be constitutional protections that would allow you to say to a government,
"This is my house."
That you should be entitled to some amount of due process before turning over that data.
Right.
And so you would presumably have an ability to respond to a government request for your data by making an argument that you shouldn't have to give it. And that's a thing that we can do for people in America, and that's a big advantage, because if the data is not in your home, it's in the hands of Twitter, for example. Twitter doesn't necessarily have those kinds of rights to protect you. And so that becomes important here.
Right.
Now, when we talk about what's happening abroad, we don't necessarily know what protections people have in every country, and there are a lot of places where people are going to want to be protected by the technology as opposed to by the legal regime.
Right.
And so encryption becomes important, safeguarding data becomes important, knowing where it is and keeping it in places that it cannot be attacked by government is obviously important. Mm-hmm. But it's not just your data, it's also your traffic. Right? There are a lot of people that live in places where they cannot surf the internet without censorship, websites being blocked, without monitoring. Right? People, government officials who track what you do and figure out patterns that identify you as a dissident, say. And there are places where you really don't want to be identified as a dissident. It would be bad for your health.
Right.
So one of the things that we're trying to do is to make it possible for people in bad situations to communicate without censorship, without being censored, and without being monitored. And so the boxes, Freedom Boxes, form a network of proxies, form a way to pass messages through national firewalls without being tracked, without being monitored, using encryption, using Tor, using whatever techniques are available, so that people who are stuck behind national firewalls can actually use the internet as freely as people in other countries.
Are you building in a encrypted distributed file system to this?
Our current hardware target does not have significant storage. You could attach storage to it.
Right, it has all sorts of ports on there.
Right, it has USB and eSATA. So you could attach a hard drive to it.
Right.
And yes, there will be some storage component to it. We're not quite sure what that looks like. We have not started doing anything with these boxes that requires a lot of storage. When we do that, we'll spec out a storage system. But we just haven't gotten to that particular thing yet. So far, we're trying to use the boxes as they are because 90% of people who get a Freedom Box are going to use it as it is.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. So how is the project? What is the status of the project now?
The status of the project is that we have identified a very long list of things we need to do. We've started doing the work on those things. For example, one of the big questions is how the boxes find each other, the routing problem. And mm-hmm. you saw earlier that right. we have started to really get to the nitty-gritty on designing how the boxes talk to each other. And some of the people in that room have actually started building that system that they described. Mm-hmm. So we're making good progress on that. We have boxes that are running the operating system and provide some services. Right now, those services mostly consist of stripping, tracking, and ads, and applying encryption to your web traffic. Mm-hmm. So there's a ad blocking web proxy, Proxy, you're familiar with that,
yeah, sure.
That we've modified to do a little bit more encryption and essentially to implement HTTPS everywhere mm-hmm. at the server level. Mm-hmm. And that will work for, you know, your entire network that is surfing through that box using it as a router.
Right. So, for example, if I had the HTTPS everywhere plugin for Firefox on my workstation, I could disable that and just rely on this. Is that correct?
That's the idea, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's actually working fairly well. We need to implement a testing framework for it so that we know it's working well. Mm-hmm. So far, we believe it's working well. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to add in some of the privacy removal stuff that is in AdBlock Plus and that kind of stuff, the privacy tracking cookie removal technology that they have, which is a harder problem but still mm-hmm. Doable. Attached to that will be web surfing via SSH proxies.
Uh-huh.
So we can...
Next step.
Right. And so this will let people surf the web through your box, and we have... boxes that are findable on the internet using Tor hidden services. Mm-hmm. So anybody can find a corresponding box if they know the hidden service address, and we're going to make that available via GPG keys. And the idea is that we can distribute boxes that are paired. So I can give one to somebody in a country where web surfing is relatively free, and one mm-hmm. to a person in a country where web surfing is relatively not free. Mm-hmm. And the person in the...
If I can interrupt you, what they do is communicate via SSH? Is that
They'll communicate via some form of encrypted tunnel, encrypted. Mostly SSH.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the person in the place that is not free will then surf the web via the Freedom Box in a freer country.
Mm-hmm.
And in this way, everybody with the Freedom Box can help one or more people in a place that they need the help very badly.
Mm-hmm.
So paired Freedom Boxes are probably one of our next steps in terms of getting this out into the world in a way that makes an impact immediately.
Mm-hmm. So if I were just in a physical environment, perhaps, you know, for example, Colombia may have some form of web filtering to block malware and pornography, let's say. But I want something that somehow has gotten on the blacklist. I could use a Freedom Box here, say, with my connecting to my apartment, which is open through upstate, someplace very far away, and I could buy basically the traffic between here at Columbia and my the Freedom Box in my apartment would be completely encrypted and oblique, and it would just be one IP address to another IP address, and from there I could go on and find all the subversive and illicit
sure.
content.
Sure. Well, you would be surfing the internet as freely as you do at home.
Right,
you would just be
right.
able to do that from almost anywhere
yeah, right.
on the planet, including behind a horrible national firewall
right.
or behind a horrible corporate firewall.
Right. Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. So what what kind of timeline are you looking at here? And also, of course, where we were at the Hackfest, which is next door, the Freenet Foundation, is that right?
The Freedom Box Foundation.
But the Freedom Tower. Tell us about that.
Oh, so the Freedom Tower is not my project.
Right.
It is related to the work that the Freedom Box is doing.
Right.
So that's a project run by Isaac Wilder.
Mm-hmm.
And they are trying to build supernodes for mesh networking,
mm-hmm.
sort of giant repeaters that can go long distances to seed the city with enough nodes that you could start to get towards a mesh network that is actually functioning.
Uh-huh. What kind of range are they looking at with that type of equipment?
Apparently, they've got pretty good line of sight across, you know, city distances.
Mm-hmm.
They're using a 4G network for the backhaul, but they're trying to do as much meshing as they can. And they have, you know, nodes that are large and nodes that are small. And right now, they're looking for places to put them.
Mm-hmm.
So rooftops and that kind
of thing. Right. In a city, there's lots of issues because there are just so many buildings and, you know,
large physical
objects and, you know, very irregular kind of...
It's an interesting problem, and it's actually a problem that looks very different in Manhattan than it does in Brooklyn, because Manhattan has skyscrapers. So you know, topologically, Manhattan is a series of canyons,
right.
whereas Brooklyn is kind of flat, with a few stand up structures that you can see from
the farther you get from Manhattan into Brooklyn, the flatter it gets. You
know, exactly, and so for their purposes, it sounds to me from conversation with them, and I don't want to speak for their project.
Right.
I certainly can't do so authoritatively, but it sounds to me like they're seeding these nodes in Brooklyn where you've got decent line of sight,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to make some good progress. Isaac tells me that their next target is Detroit, and they have found some good support there where they can put some nodes and they can start trying this stuff in different cities and see how to build mesh networks in different contexts.
Detroit is kind of a frontier now, as they they raise buildings, and a lot of people are coming there to do different things. Now that it is so sort of desolate, but it's still kind of an open area where artists and other hackers and people are coming and forming new kinds of communities there.
Sure, there's a lot of good projects and a lot of good work happening there because there's room for new things.
Right, right. Okay, well, let me thank you, I'm glad that that we've been able to sort of get this started, and that it's really coming to something. I think this is kind of critical, and I think that basically that this is my hope, and I'm sure you agree that this is not unreasonable, that the internet now is coming back from that centralized kind of architecture with these centralized services back to the original model of decentralization and greater freedom, and that will be a real opportunity for human rights and for technical innovation. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.